Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Christine from North Carolina. Welcome, Christine.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you doing?
Great. I'm great. It's great to have you on the air tonight.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Hey, I understand that you are, quote, closing the gap, unquote.
Yes.
Great. Tell us all about it.
Okay. So Closing the Gap is a long-distance bicycling event to raise money and awareness for the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
Right.
And when I cycle this section between Wisconsin and my home in North Carolina, I will have closed my cycling gap and will have cycled from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, and I wanted to raise money, funds for the Africa Vulnerable Children Project to somewhat close the gap between their poverty and our wealth here.
Great, great. Yeah, it's fascinating. So for people who haven't read about what you're doing, and I'll also refer people to the fundraiser section on the on the Living Compassion website. If you go to Africa Vulnerable Children Project, under there's a section on fundraisers, which are a lot of fun, and yours is listed there. And can you tell people what you did last summer?
Last summer, I did a bicycle trip also to raise money for the Africa Vulnerable Children Project, and I cycled from the coast of Oregon into Canada, and then I ended in Wisconsin. And it was 3,100 miles of cycling, self-contained. There were two of us to four of us, and we just carry everything we need on our bicycles, and we bicycled for 6 weeks.
Oh, great, great. And so where do you end up spending the night?
We camp all sorts of different places, sometimes state parks, sometimes city parks. We use adventure cycling maps, and they're very detailed when we can. They're very detailed maps and give us ideas of places to camp from the maps, and then we just find places as we go.
Oh, great. Yeah, that sounds like fun. And do people ever come up to you and ask you about why you're cycling and all that?
Yeah. And I can let them know about the Africa Project.
Oh, great. I know for me, having gone to the Bridge Walk for many years, I have the T-shirts from the Bridge Walk, and it's fun for me to walk around, and occasionally someone will say, oh, what is that about? And it's fun for me to, you know, be excited about that, because it's not hard for me to be excited about the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
Yeah, me too.
And it was fun reading what you'd written about your cycling event, about closing the gap for your cycling trip, and also closing the gap between the wealth here and the poverty there. And for me, it's always fun to think about, you know, when I think about wealth and poverty, I sometimes want to put those in quotes, because it seems to me, reading the blog, that there's a financial wealth and a wealth of, stuff, for lack of a better term, that we have here, and perhaps there's a different kind of wealth that is in abundance in Cantalamba.
Yeah, I agree. When I wrote the letter, I wrote monetary wealth, because it's true. They have other kinds of wealth there where they live. It sounds like, I haven't been there, but it sounds like they have their families and they happily are living their life the way that it is. And I think it's fun to be able to assist them, you know, to some degree, to at least have the basic needs met, food and clean water.
Oh, yeah.
Shelter. Yeah.
Indeed. Definitely. Yeah, it's almost like, as you're talking, I'm thinking, you know, we have our version of wealth to share, and they have their version of wealth to share. And as is true, when I'm present to life, I can see that there's, you know, wealth everywhere all around me. And it's really fun to see that kind of, quote, wealth in a new and different way. And I don't know if you've read the blogs, but there are a couple of blogs up from the current trip. And I was real, I don't want to give it all away, but I was really excited to see how the team in Cantalomba want to take next steps with their project. And to me, it was a real example of taking responsibility for what they're doing. And I'll refer people to the blog because I don't want to give it all away. It's really exciting. And what I see in what I've read there is a real sense of taking responsibility for the contribution that they are able to make. Similarly, I project that we do that as a Sangha, as a community here, find out what's possible for us, what can we take responsibility for, what can we commit to, and offer that to them.
I have that experience too. Just since I loved a bicycle, so you know, it's something that I love to do, and that's, I guess, that's my contribution. And I can see people all through my life making contributions in their own way. And yeah, it's inspiring to see anybody doing whatever they do to contribute.
Exactly. And for me, it's so fun what you're doing. And I'm just reading it here again. 1,000 miles of cycling in about 2.5 weeks. And I'll project here that for many of us, that would seem like an overwhelming task. And yet, when we look around the world, we see lots of inspiring stories, like your story, story in Cantalomba. We had on here a few months ago a woman who's rowing across the Atlantic Ocean to bring awareness about clean water. And to me, it's so fun to see what you're doing and what everybody else is doing, because that awakens for me that inspiration that I know is in all of us, and to see how, you know, what is it that I can do? How can I can contribute? So tell me about the children that you're sponsoring over there.
Oh, well, two children. I don't know too much about them, but they're adorable. And one is named Sumba, and one is named Christine. And I think they're 6 years old. And they look like, from the pictures, they look like they have been eating now, and I understand they're going to school. And I'm happy for them and all the other children who are eating now and attending school.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. And it's fun for me when we can put a name and a face to the need and really feel like there's that connection there. And I'm thinking of, you know, you have your children that you're sponsoring, and I'm thinking of the 100 children video, which was, for me, very moving, showing the faces and the names of the first 100 children that we were.
Yeah, that was very moving for me too to watch.
Yes. So, Christine, you're going to be starting in about a week.
Yes.
How is all the preparation coming?
It's coming along. I've prepared my bicycle.
Good. First step.
Ready now.
Yeah.
And I'm packing my bags and my panniers and everything that I'll need for that 2.5 weeks. So yeah, it's all coming together nicely.
Wonderful.
And it's been really fun for me to I sent letters to family members and friends, and it's been really fun getting checks in the mail and with people and sending me little notes. You know, people are excited about this fundraiser, and I've just really enjoyed receiving the money that I'm going to be donating.
Yeah, it's really great. It's really wonderful. I think you're doing a wonderful thing. And I love what you wrote in your letter. You said that this work unites us all in humanity.
Yes, it does. Unites us all in humanity.
A wonderful.
Yeah, that's how it feels to me.
Great. Great. Well, I'm excited to hear how it goes. So, I look forward to hearing all about it. And thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk with you.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Good evening and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Dave, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. It was fun listening to that interview just there.
Yes. You know, I biked to work today, and as I do every day, and for me it's a good workout, and it's not 1,000 miles.
Yeah. Well, when you're motivated by generosity and compassion, it's amazing what you can do, huh?
Yes, that is absolutely true.
Yeah, and it's such a neat thing to do, you know, and it's occurring to me that there's a lot of stuff like that happening today. It's all very inspiring. You know, you talked to a fellow couple 3 weeks ago about a garden that he had started in order to raise money for Living Compassion.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of really fun things like that people are doing that I just find really, really energizing to hear about, just like what Christine's doing. And I had the pleasure today of talking to, you know, you're very well aware, I'm sure, that there's, you know, this whole thing happening with Teresa Kapinda is coming back from Zambia with the Africa team, and she's traveling to 8 or 9 cities.
Yeah.
There's all these big events going on, and so we're scurrying around on our end,
you
know, trying to settle that stuff up. And I had the pleasure of talking with the folks in Asheville, and as a matter of fact, Christine was one of them, who are working on the event over there. And it was just so fun to hear everyone's enthusiasm and excitement, and, you know, they're talking about how they're going to do it and, you know, what refreshments they're going to have and how we're going to publicize and everything. And everyone's just really excited to be a part of it and participating in it. And I just feel like I see that all over the place, and feels like it's so good for all of us.
Oh, yes, indeed. My experience as well.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's an inevitable result of practice is to get inspired about life.
It really is. I really think you're right about that. And, you know, it's fun, too, to tag it along with the Working Candelumba. I thought it was a real interesting thing you guys were talking about, you know, wealth in quotes and what really is wealth. And, you know, because that's very much a part of our work in Africa, I think, is the recognition that, you know, we have material wealth here. But they have a wealth that I think a lot of us here are missing. And Christine mentioned it, you know, the family, there's community. I mean, just seeing, you know, I saw those blogs too, and I'm as excited as you are. But just seeing, like, the women, the picture of the women in the blogs, they love to be together. You know, all the women who work for Living Compassion there in the compound. You know, they all have these uniforms. Right now they're blue. They've got these blue shirts and this blue, beautiful shitenge material that they wrap around their waist. And, you know, and they sing and they dance and they have just such a wonderful time with each other. And that's something that I think we can really, the kind of wealth that we could really use, I think, a lot of us over here.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's a big, you know, we bring what we have to them, they offer what they have to us, and I feel like it's a really, really profitable exchange for everybody.
Yes. What's coming to mind is it's like an equal exchange. We each bring our open hearts to the best of our abilities, and magical things happen as a result.
Yeah, it's so true. It really is, you know. And, they inspire us, you know. And I think we inspire them. It's fun, too, because there's actually some stuff in the blog about that. But, you know, we inspire them in what we're willing to do, and they inspire us in what they're willing to do. And there's something in that where we leave our little petty concerns and our separate personalities behind in order to join in that inspiration. And, you know, together there's something really beautiful that's created that everybody can feel. And it's neat that, you know, it's spread throughout the world. So Teresa's coming, so she's going to be able to share herself in a really big way for several weeks here in our country. And, you know, and already the energy of that people are getting to participate in, like with in Asheville and Boston and D.C., San Francisco, you know, all the other places where she's going to go, you know, people are all getting ready and people are kind of jumping into the excitement of that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Dave, we have several callers here.
Okay, well, let's do it.
Okay, first caller, you are now on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Oh, well, hi, this is George
Hey, George.
From Pennsylvania. Hi, Dave. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What's going on, George?
Well, life is quite amazing.
It is. It's a true statement.
Yeah. It's been interesting to notice what's going on lately. Self-hate's most productive form of attack on me is in dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it sets up scenarios that drag up old, very old, depressed states of mind that I've experienced over and over and over and over again. And then if I don't remember the dream, if I can remember the dream, then I can usually diffuse the emotional energy and change the focus of my attention to where I want it to be. Sometimes I can't remember the dream, and that energetic residue stays in my body as anxiety and depression, which is, as I've learned, just sensation with a story.
Yes.
So when I can accept the sensation and actually go into the sensation and be fine with the sensation, whether it's anxiety, depression, whatever, fatigue, you know, all the stuff that goes together. I mean, aches and pains, everything. It just comes in a whole bundle. And accept them and then separate them from the story that is attached to it,
mm-hmm.
Then that works, and they gradually fade away, and then I can come back to where I really want to be.
Yeah, it really does work, doesn't it? It's kind of the magic bullet in a way. I've been looking at this a lot, actually. You know, because we talk about things in our practice in a lot of different ways and from a lot of different angles. You know, we'll talk about stories and beliefs and assumptions. We'll talk about we'll talk about working with suffering in terms of like the mentor and how we can mentor
mm-hmm.
ourselves. And another way to, and it really all comes down to the same thing. It's kind of like different ways to talk
yeah.
about the same thing. But another way we can talk about it is the way you're talking about it, which is it's sort of like taking the suffering down to the place where it starts and cutting it off at the origin. Because,
mm-hmm.
as you know, and as you're recognizing, you know, conditioned mind, you know, it's all mental, and it's all just kind of floating around up here in the mind. We're thinking it. But it actually has to attach to something that's here in order to be here. And so what it attaches to is our bodies. We normally are not aware of how that happens. But if we, as we pay attention and kind of break it down and move closer and closer into the origin, like you're talking about doing, what we get down to is, well, it's just some sensations there that are moving around in the body. And then conditioning is attaching a meaning to that. And then we're off and running into conditioned mind. So if we can get, I think this is what you're talking about, if we can learn how to take our attention down to that sensation level, drop all of the story that goes along with it, we can free ourselves because we can detach all of the conditioning from the sensations and just experience the sensations.
Yeah. It really is a process of freeing oneself once you separate from that story.
Mm-hmm.
And then conditioning will, you know, if it's really been a successful dream from conditioning's perspective, and it really has, you know, kind of that residue of the dream is really strong, the emotional, the physical, all that stuff is really strong, then as I work out of it, it will go into a yeah, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, but, yeah, it's okay to feel bad. It's okay to feel all these emotions. It's okay to feel terrible. It's okay to have bad dreams. It's okay to, yeah, right, you can separate from the story. But how about this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what about this? And then whatever it thinks it can hook me with. And the one thing that it currently is most successful at hooking me with is my over 30-year relationship with my wife.
Yeah, and really, George, that's just more of the same, right? That's daytime dreams.
It's more of the same, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's attempting to do to you in the daytime what it's doing to you at night. You know, at night,
right.
You really, I mean, you there's no way, as far as I have experienced so far in my life anyway, there's no way for you to be present to the story that it's throwing at you like you were just talking about. You know, it's not possible to recognize that, and I'm not saying this isn't possible, just it's not my experience so far.
Yeah, you're so far, right?
Yeah, that it's, you know, you can't, at least you can't, you know, recognize that as a story and bring your attention back down to the sensations of your body and let it go. And so it has kind of free reign with you, and you wake up in the consequence of that. You know, your attention is way away from the sensations. You're into the story,
yeah.
And that's all this, that angst and that emotional churning is all about, because you're in the reality that it's trying to create for you all the time. It's the
yeah.
same thing walking around. So you're walking around, you're attempting to be present, and it's trying to do the exact same thing with you,
mm-hmm.
Where it will pull you into something that's not here, pull your attention away from your body, and then, you know, paint this picture of how things are that you're going to suffer over. And so you have the same opportunity here, too, don't you? You know, it brings in the content, you know, about your marriage, and then, you know, you're supposed to just be kind of off and running with that and off into conditioned mind and suffering, but you can do the same thing where you drop that and bring that back to the place where it's attached. You know, it's that place in your body where it's not being attended to that all that kind of is launching off from.
Yeah, yeah. And the hook with my wife is that she is this wonderful, beautiful woman who I'm very strongly attracted to, very talented artist, extremely intelligent, but is totally unaffectionate toward me and usually doesn't approve of me. She thinks this practice is a waste of time and wants nothing to do with it. And, you know, I'm always making mistakes and, you know, she's always suffering because of me and so on and so forth. And in a way, it's perfect because it's such a wonderful opportunity and challenge to be in such a relationship, to be with someone who doesn't approve of me, who doesn't support me in the things that I do. There's something really interesting about that, but at the same time, there's this inner teenager that just wants affection, just wants to be affectionate toward a woman, just wants to, you know, cuddle and hug and kiss and, you know, all that. And you know, that's been a tough one. That's really been a tough one. And yet we have, you know, we have this beautiful family. We have a couple of, well, they're both grown up and left home. But, you know, a son and a daughter who are just terrific people who we both really love, and we love to get together with them and so on. So there's this family dynamic that's really quite wonderful. But at the same time, there is this one character inside of me that is just, you know, feels like not getting his needs met. He really wants this. He really needs this. This is not fair. This is not right. You know, this should be different. This, you know, all of that stuff. So it's that's the biggest hook
mm-hmm.
right now. And it doesn't.
Right. And so, George, so I, as you look at that, do you see how that is in the realm of the story that we were just talking about?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So without the
yep.
story and without whatever the voices have to say about it, what does it look like just from, you know, being present, just from being in the same place that your body is?
Yeah, it looks like, yes, that there is this inner teenager, there is this desire, there is this want, there is this you know, desire for affection, of a certain physical type of affection. And that's fine. You know, it's there. And it's not... Um, in a way, it doesn't matter. It's just one more thing. I mean, I you know, it's among the desires that I have. It's a very strong one. But
yeah, and so it's going to be hard because it's something that's strong and seems really real to you. It's going to be hard to get past that person with your attention.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, because probably, you know, you could see at least theoretically with this that if you were to do the same thing with that you were talking about earlier, you know, bringing your attention down to the sensations.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you can see how in kind of an unexpected way that need would get met. The need that he arrives on the scene in the absence of. So in other words, I would bet you that if you were to be willing to, you know, you see him, which is really good. You see him, you drop, you know, but recognize he's just a part of you. The way he sees things is not necessarily so, and yet he's responding to a need that's not being met, just because that's what all these parts of ourselves are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so recognizing that, there's the opening to go beyond with your attention, go deeper than him, you could say. Because he's standing on top of a sensation too, somewhere. And so bring your attention down to the sensation of him in your body. And you were talking earlier about accepting that those sensations, which in my mind is the same thing as just experiencing them. So experiencing him, experiencing the feelings that that are him, and the sensations that all of his conversation sort of start from, and just being willing to experience it without trying to make it go away or without trying to manipulate it in any way, I think what you would find is the affection or the love or whatever that he is missing in that.
Yeah, I think that's really what happens. I think that's pretty much exactly what I've experienced with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's tricky to get past these things, especially the ones that are really powerful. You know, another way of talking about it is they're really karmic. You know, they're the ones that seem really real and really believable and have a lot of energy with them and turn into a lot of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that we can't. It just means that it's more difficult. And, you know, we often will start with the little things. You know, we'll start with the things that are manageable to us, and we'll learn how we can drop the story, move the attention back here to the body, hold the experience that we're actually having here just in this moment, and we're free and we have everything that we want. And then we kind of expand and start bringing in things that are larger and larger and larger. And then, you know, we always run up into something that we feel like we can't do that with. This is too real, too believable, there's too much energy here. But then as we practice with it, even that also becomes what we can transform through just that really simple power of our attention that you were talking about.
Yeah, I think the story that I get into is, well, I'm denying myself, you know. I'm accepting the situation as it is, and I'm, you know, I really should be doing something about this. I should be with somebody else. I should be, you know.
Yep, and all that takes you in the opposite direction.
That whole story.
Yeah, and that story, just like any story, it takes you in the opposite direction of the body.
Mm-hmm.
It takes
mm-hmm.
you up instead of down into the body and takes you off into the conditioned mind, which is the point.
Yep.
You know, that's the only reason that those kind of conversations would begin, is to pull you up into a place where you'll be out of touch with the experience that's right here, right now, and so also out of touch with the possibility of really having what you want.
Yeah.
Because that is what's available
right
here, right now. And that's always what those stories are about.
Very good.
All right, good. Yeah, good. Excellent.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Dave.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, George.
Thanks, Michael.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling, George.
Good night.
Good night.
Dave, we're going to take a sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
Okay, great.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, I'd like to give out the phone number, and then I wanted to mention one item on the schedule.
Okay, great.
So, number is toll-free, 888-4-SANGA. And if you turn those letters into numbers, you get 888-472-6442. That will get you into the TalkShoe system, and once you're there, press 15406 pound, and that will get you to Open Air. And the one item I saw on the schedule, Dave, is that Sherry's going to be in Esalen in about 10 days, end of August.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be there August 28th through the 30th. That's a weekend retreat. And the workshop is What You Practice is What You Have.
Yep. Should be a good time.
Should be a good time.
Yeah. This is actually a good time to go on the schedule page anyway, because there's way more opportunities than usual to participate in something just because of the Teresa tour and everything that's happening and all these
things. Yes. Yes. It's very fun. And I have not been to Esalen, and I understand it's a very beautiful place.
I've heard that too. I have not been there either.
Great. And we have another caller here.
Okay, great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's John in Los Angeles.
Hey, John.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm always fascinated by how the timing of my calls always seems to correspond with the themes of the day.
With the what of the day? I'm sorry.
The themes.
Oh, the theme of the day.
Yeah, or just it seems that maybe that the similar degrees to which people are expressing what's going on for them are, it's all pretty much the same, just different contents. But every time I call, it always seems like what's being spoken about is sort of addressing what it was that I was calling in about.
Yeah, that we have that, we comment about that a lot around here. Is, you know, the group, it's kind of like when people come to a group at the monastery, everybody's coming with the same issue, you know, and so it's just kind of magical the way it all gets addressed at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what I've been thinking about lately is having sort of more what I want as opposed to this relationship with conditioning and participation and purpose and, you know, wanting to find ways to connect more, and sort of there's a certain struggle that's going on that's really challenging me, and I guess I was calling in today because it feels very tender. There's a certain quality of sadness that I'm frustrated by. What I sort of project is an inability to connect the way I want to, or at least I think I want to, and it's really challenging my practice because I feel like I really want to be more participant, and I feel very stuck in a certain sort of certain kind of routine that's not serving me, is actually serving conditioning and my sense of being identified more.
Did you say an inability to connect?
Yeah, to sort of connect and in other words, I feel identified with being separate.
Uh-huh.
And the long way around the bush.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what do you see about that?
Well, it seems like the layers get more subtle for me. I continue to practice, and I continue to look at things as much as possible from a point of view of being centered and not identifying too strongly with sort of internal dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep coming back to a certain place where there's some aspect of me, there's some sub, I guess, that really wants something different than what's going on for me, and it keeps more and more subtly kind of attacking me. I'm not really quite sure where to go with it.
Now, when you're talking about connecting, are you talking about connecting with the practice, with other people in your life? With what are you talking about there exactly?
Good question. I'm going to have to go with more. I mean, both actually. I guess I've reached a point where it's sort of intermingled. That the more connected I feel to practice, the more connected I feel to people in general, and I've been sort of, most of the focus of my life has been sort of work. You know, I worked most of my life, you know, trying to you know, work as a musician and sort of do what I do. And that I've sort of reached a point where that's not really enough. That's not what I want. I want to be more in service and sort of participant in ways that have a greater sense of connection to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding myself frustrated that I'm not really able to do that, or not as well as I'd like to be.
I see. So the obvious question is, are you doing things that, are you participating in things that are available, or is that the place that, where the stuck starts to happen? Like, for example, you're obviously participating tonight on the radio show. Are you participating in practice in other ways, or are you participating in, like, for example, I don't know what kind of inspires you to do, but, you know, organizations in your area that are doing good work that you want to be a part of? Are you giving yourself those kinds of opportunities?
Some and not. There were sitting groups down here I was participating, but that in on my area, that sort of dissolved.
Mm-hmm.
The groups that are doing good things, a couple of them, I've been doing some mentoring work, but it's far and few between. And I've been in an area outside of where I live in LA. There's in New York, I've been going and doing some mentoring and sort of service-oriented work. But New York is, as I said, kind of far from LA. So I guess, God, I'm really going a long way around the bush tonight. I think it's hard for me to get to saying that I'm not sure if I'm doing all I can. It feels like I am, but it feels very tender. There's a part of me that feels very, frustrated and sad by what feels like a lack of connection, and I'm not sure if it's my lack of effort or just that's the way things are at the moment.
Uh-huh. And what if you look at it just on an internal level? Do you feel like what sort of processes do you know is going on inside that would be disconnecting you from what's going on?
Can you say that another way?
Yeah. So, obviously, it really helps to participate in things, obviously. You know, we talk about that around here all the time, you know, and that's a big motivation for the kind of stuff that the organization I belong to does. You know, we're trying to put out stuff all the time for people to participate in, because it's really, it's good to have something to give yourself to, because that's how we get out of isolation, you know.
I agree with that.
Yeah. And so, and you know, they're not, even though there's a lot of stuff going on, most of the stuff that's going on generally supports separation instead of, you know, connection, like you're talking about. For example, a lot of the things people participate in would be along the lines of, let's say, entertainment. You know, so you get to go, you have an experience, but it's, and you're participating, like maybe you like go out to a show or something, let's say, and you get to experience that, but the attitude of mind, I think, that most people bring to that is, well, this is something for me. You know, I'm having this experience. I like this. I don't like this. Those kind of things. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that it really doesn't take us in a direction of connection. Because it continues to support this idea that I'm a somebody who wants something, and I'm trying to get that need met on the outside, which is a part of what I hear in what you're saying. You know, you're looking for the circumstances in your life to line up in a way so that you can feel connected. And so,
yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I think that just if I'm hearing you're saying correctly, is that this sense that there are events that separate me that I can participate in, but separate me, and if I'm saying that correctly, it would be that my dissatisfaction is arising out of a sense that those things don't actually satisfy me. Those sort of going out and doing those things are not what I'm interested in, and sort of a vital sense of purpose and a sense of community are things that really interest me more, and that's not what I'm finding myself doing.
And is that so? That's not what you're finding yourself doing. You're finding yourself making choices that don't really support what you truly want for yourself, but more kind of the habit of who you've always known yourself to be.
Partially, and also that certain structures within how my life works have changed a lot in the last year or two, just for like a lot of people's lives have. And so there's a certain structure that's in place that's, I'm not sure I'm even making choices. I'm not even sure if there are choices as available as I'd like them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the frustration. So I think that I recognize that being of service does take me out of a sense of being, you know, identified as a me that wants something, and I'm not able to find those things that I'm able to connect with. And it's challenging me a lot, actually.
Right. Yeah. So that takes us to the internal part that we started off on a minute ago, because, you know, everything that we just said, we could say is true, that it helps to have something to participate in that asks for a we kind of mentality rather than an I kind of mentality. That's why people, you know, like, you know, saints and religious people from the beginning of time have all talked about service, because it really helps to get out of the ego, to give oneself to something that's larger than the ego. So that's really true. And yet, at the same time, there's an internal aspect of that, too. It would also be possible to say, it sounds like the opposite, but it really isn't, that really nothing outside of you matters, that you could be experiencing that kind of connection all the time if you were connected with yourself. And so there's this kind of interesting thing there where how can all that come together? You know, how can the inside and the outside meet? And I think that's kind of what you're looking for.
Yeah, I think as I'm hearing you speak, it's interesting. I notice that there's a very brutal part of me that is assessing that somehow that I am the wrong person because I can't make these connections. That's what I'm really coming to.
Yeah, I bet
somehow
you're right.
I'm sorry?
I said, I bet you're right. And the interesting part of that for me is that it's very likely that it really kind of goes back in a way to what we're talking about with George, you know, in the sense that it's basically a story. And
right.
So what happens with the story is when we're in the story, everything that we see seems to reflect the reality of that story. Right?
That's
so if you're
100%
in a story,
accurate.
So if you're in a story that says, you know, basically, there's no way for you to have connection, you're not going to see any way for you to have any connections.
Yeah.
But if you're living inside where, you know, this is what, like, you know, meditation is all about. And just the really simple practices that we do, you know, bringing the attention back to the breath, you know, feeling the sensations in the body, you know, as we're moving around through life, you know, being in our bodies, being present to, you know, the things we're picking up and moving around or eating or all those kind of things. Because that brings us into connection with ourselves, right? And so I would bet you if you were to start to examine that story and let go of that story, a couple things would happen. First thing is you would immediately begin to become more connected with yourself, because that story is a story of isolation. You would start to experience yourself in a different way. You would probably become, you know, you would realize, you know, how you can be more in your body and those kind of things. And I bet what would happen is you would start to see the openings that are probably there already to take the steps you want to take in the world that's outside of you.
It's very challenging. It's a very persistent, I mean, the sentence you said, you know, that how the story is creating how I'm seeing the world, it's, you know, it's like almost like going back and forth on that, because you start to want, it's like a chicken before the egg thing. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like, is my state of mind reflecting what's occurring, or is my state of mind causing what's occurring?
Yeah, see, I don't think it is a chicken and the egg. I don't know which one's the chicken and which one's the egg, but
right.
The one that comes first is what's going on inside.
Okay.
You know, because I mean, the outward events are whatever they are, but, you know, everything that you perceive and everything that all of us perceive, you know, comes from where we're looking. And
right.
there is this kind of, maybe this is what you mean by chicken and egg, there is kind of this magical thing that happens. I was kind of hinting at this a minute ago where, you know, to change one's internal reality, there's this funny way where the outside kind of seems to line up with that. Like if you were to, or any of us were to move to a place where we feel completely satisfied and connected with all that is and, you know, those kinds of things, suddenly that's what the world would look like. And there would be a lot of stuff happening out there that seemed like it was only possible because that's, you know, because that's what's going on. And then it's really, it's hard to know, okay, well, what came first? But at least in my experience, as far as practice goes, we have to look to see what's going on the inside, because otherwise we're just, if we're willing to believe in the reality of the outside at all, then we're going to believe stories about it, and then we'll leave what's here, and we won't really be able to make free choices about what we want.
Go sit. I love that. That's the answer. It's go sit.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, essentially that's, I can always come with content. I always love this part. This is my favorite part of all group discussions. And essentially what we always get to is go sit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you consider that sitting takes a lot of different forms, like, there's actually sitting meditation. There's, eating meditation, whatever work you do, you'll be meditating while you're working. Yeah. You'll be practicing being present. And that's, of course, as you very well know, if there is any connection available, that's where it's going to come from. Even connection to an outside thing, like a person or an organization or a cause, something like that, that kind of thing is not possible if there's no kind of connection happening inside.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that. Okay, Dave, well, I appreciate that a lot. I'm actually going to go hit the cushion right about now.
Okay, well, that was fun talking about it. Thanks, John.
All right, Dave, thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, John. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have the great privilege of being joined by Dave, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Dave, I'm going to give out that phone number again. Phone lines are wide open here. Toll free. Now is your chance. That's 888-472-6442. That will get you into TalkShoe. And then to get onto Open Air, press 15406#, and I think you press 1 after that, and that'll get you in the queue here. And Dave, we're going to have a sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Michael.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, they have responded.
Good for them. Otherwise, it's me and you, right?
Yes. Thank goodness. Okay, next caller. You are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Patty from Los Angeles.
Hey, Patty.
Hi.
A lot going on in Los Angeles tonight, isn't there?
I know, yeah. It's the Los Angeles contingent. well, I thought I would take advantage of the fact that the lines were open and talk about something that I've been looking at lately.
Great.
Which is that what I'm seeing is how quickly things that I want to do become shoulds.
Oh, Yep.
So I've been noticing that, sometimes it happens almost instantaneously where it'll occur to me to do something and then it's like the very next moment it's become something that I should do.
Yep. And so what goes on with that? Why do you think that's part of the program that happens?
Well, I think that I've been heavily conditioned to believe that if something that if no should, that it's not going to get done.
Hmm. Did you say if it's a should, that it's not going to get done?
No, that if there is no should, then it won't get done.
Right, right. So here's something you really want. The way to make it happen is turn it into a should.
Mm-hmm.
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 And in your experience, does having it a should, making it a should, does that actually get it done?
A lot of times, no.
Yeah. That's how it is, isn't
it? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that, for a long time, I was just kind of following the program. And it just seemed like my whole life was just ruled by that voice. And you know, lately that's not really the case anymore. And I'm starting to really pay attention to that process of, you know, how things become shoulds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so something that can be, you know, like I said, you know, sometimes it's instantaneous, and other times it takes a long time. You know, I'll really enjoy something that I'm doing for days or weeks or months, and then at some point, I've realized that it's no longer, it doesn't have that kind of joyous, inspirational quality anymore. It's now become something on a to-do list.
Yep, yep. So it's really been taken away from you at that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is exactly what happens, right? And don't you think that's kind of the point, is to take what you enjoy, what you love, what you're excited about, and just take it right away from you. Turn it into something that is going to feed the conditioned system instead of feeding your heart and, you know, giving you more life and more energy and just more kind of participation in the life that you have.
Yeah. Yeah, that really makes me sad when I think about that.
It makes you sad.
Mm-hmm.
Say more.
I think that I guess I'm sad when I think about the possibility that everything that I love is going to get taken away from me in that way.
Yeah, well, of course it doesn't have to.
Right.
But that definitely is the program that goes on. And it is, I understand what you're saying. I mean, it is sad when you think about it. You know, when you think, you can see why people will often get so exhausted. You know, trying to live in a world of shoulds where that's really kind of the only option, it's like trying to, slog uphill all the time. Where,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I don't really want to be doing this, but I should. And even what I want to do is turned into a should, and I have to do that. And it's like trying to live somebody else's life or according to somebody else's agenda. It's just no fun, and it wears us out over time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, I've been practicing with... I've been doing the 30-day retreat in Making a Change for Good.
Great.
I'm on my second round.
All right.
And I'm seeing how, you know, it's a different process now. You know, instead of getting whipped into doing something, that there's a different process with, you know, where a mentor. It's more like. I'm doing something because I don't, it's like there's a person in me that really wants something for my life, and I don't want to let that person down.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, that is so powerful, isn't it? I mean, that really provides the motivation for freeing ourselves from conditioning to get it that, you know, if we go along living this life, you know, really what you're talking about is a life dominated by conditioning. You know, shoulds always come from conditioning. And so, you know, here's this life. It's not my life, really. It's not my choosing. It's just this program that's been given to me to supposedly make me a good person. But, of course, it doesn't even really produce that. But that's what it's supposed to produce. And I'm slogging away through this life as if somehow eventually that's going to get me happy. And to realize that that life, the only thing it's ever going to lead to is unhappiness. And, you know, you think about someone who never wakes up to that fact and lives their whole life in that program. That really is sad because, you know, that's a life that essentially was not lived. It was a life given to conditioned mind. And how powerful it is to see, as you have, that that isn't what you want, that you want to be alive. You want to actually have a life that's yours. And with that seeing, there begins to come the power to free yourself from that habit of conditioning to just kind of go along and try to be a good person or whatever, and basically spend your life, spend your life in a way that you really don't want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess my question then is kind of, you know, what happens? What do I do when I can see that here's this thing that I want to do, and it's become a should.
Mm-hmm.
What step do I then take to kind of, I mean, other than just seeing that?
Well, I wonder if that's enough. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
When your experience so far, when you have really seen that and you're watching conditioning do what it does, what effect does that have?
Well, it's definitely dismantling the belief,
mm-hmm.
That I need to put this on a to-do list in order to get it done. You know, and so that's, I can see that happening, but it still doesn't get, I've noticed that, you know, just because I've seen that and just because the belief has been dismantled, it doesn't necessarily lead to me doing that thing.
Oh, okay, I see. Well, maybe that's the difficulty.
You know, just like, just as an example, for instance, you know, like I thought today, well, you know, I'd like to clean the bathroom. It's really a mess in here, and it would be nice if it were clean.
Mm-hmm.
And it just immediately went to, I should do this, and there was a whole story about how I didn't really, that it wasn't going to be fun, and that, you know, it, there were things that, better ways to spend my time, you know, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
So I caught that happening. I saw that happening, and yet I still didn't clean the bathroom.
Uh-huh. Do you have a sense why? What went on there?
Maybe I was still believing that story.
Yeah. Well, the trick, this really goes back to what we were just talking about a minute ago with John. The trick for me anyway is, you know, we do have to disentangle ourselves from the outside. You know, if our sense of happiness or well-being or ease or peace or whatever we're going for really is dependent on something happening on the outside, then we're sunk, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we really, you know, that's the realm of conditioned mind. You know, so we really do have to get to a place where it doesn't matter whether you clean the bathroom. It's totally okay. You know, you're a totally okay person, like that. And at the
mm-hmm.
same time, there's some really fun stuff with that attitude of mind. There's some really fun stuff we can do with the outside. For example, you know, conditioning says, oh, you don't want to do that. That's going to be boring. You're going to hate that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can really challenge conditioning. Say, okay, well, I think what I'm going to do as my spiritual project today is I'm going to clean the bathroom and see how much fun I can have.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, that did occur to me. I thought about that. I thought, you know, maybe I should just do it now before this really settles in. You know, just do it.
Yeah, well, not do it to get it done, to get it checked off a do list, because that's what conditioning is trying to get you to do, right?
Right, right.
But to do it with it with the understanding that, you know, it doesn't matter if the bathroom gets cleaned or not. My happiness and well-being does not depend on a clean bathroom, right?
Right.
Because the joy of life comes from going beyond suffering, if you really want to kind of boil it down. I mean, that's what's fun. That's what's exciting about life. And all the content of life can be used to that end. And so, you know, you could not approach the bathroom from a point of view saying, I'm going to see how much fun I can have cleaning this, unless it was okay with you that the bathroom didn't get cleaned.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you have
mm-hmm.
to step out of the
mm-hmm.
should about that in order to get to that place, which, of course, is really the whole point of it.
Right, right. And I guess I also have to let go of the idea that there are activities that are more worthwhile than cleaning the bathroom.
Absolutely, yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you really are in the driver's seat. You can do all kinds of stuff, you know, because you're aware that everything in life is there for you as a spiritual opportunity, and just something to have fun with, and so you can see how things work, and also a way to assert your power over conditioning, then things get really kind of exciting pretty quickly. You know, because everything, you know, you'll be watching the voices and seeing what the voices are saying. You know, they're always talking to you, talking you out of things that are joyful, happy, pleasant, enjoyable. They're always trying to talk you into misery. So that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll just be watching how it does that. And so it might be saying, talking to you about, you know, what a lousy person you are because of that conversation you had earlier today with such and such a person, for example. You could do
mm-hmm.
things like buy yourself some flowers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something to prove to yourself that what the voices are saying are not true, and that also you're really more powerful than the voices. You can make free choices and loving choices for yourself that conditioning would never allow you if it could prevent it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's sort of a flip side to this issue,
mm-hmm.
which is that sometimes conditioning will say, will try to talk me into doing something, and the reason is, you know, if it's something that I don't want to do, it tries to talk me into doing it by saying it's going to be a good workshop for you.
Uh-huh. So it's taken the Zen angle, and it's working the angle now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that gets very confusing, you know, because I it just, you know, when it starts to, you know, get a hold of the practice and use that, then I just don't know which way is up, you know?
Well, you don't know which way is up as long as you're focused on the outside thing, I would imagine. Like whether you should do the thing it's telling you to do or not.
Mm-hmm.
To recognize that, like, to pull the attention away from there, I mean, this is really the basic trick that we're talking about, to pull the attention away from the outside thing, recognizing it doesn't have to do with the outside thing. You know, again, that's what conditioning,
right.
conditioning is using that. If it can get you to focus on that and believe in the reality of that outside thing or the importance of it or whatever, it's got you. Instead, its
right.
attention is on what are the voices saying right now, for example, or what's conditioning doing right now to try to ruin my good time. Then everything
right.
gets really clear really quickly, right? Because
yeah.
it becomes really evident, for example, that it doesn't matter what you do. Do whatever you want. Who cares? You know, do that. Do
yeah.
what it says you're going to do.
Right.
What it wants you to do, don't do what it says it wants you to do.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter because the point is, whatever happens, you're going to be watching it, and you're going to be using whatever the circumstance is to see more about how conditioning works and to become step-by-step freer from the hold it has on you.
Mm-hmm. You know, that is so good to hear. It feels so liberating to think, you know, it really doesn't matter what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course, you know, conditioning will try to, you know, get me all caught up in the content and make me believe that whatever, you know, decision that I make is super important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really not.
It really isn't. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Truly. There is nothing outside of you that has the power to determine your inside experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really doesn't matter. You know, the only thing that matters, and in a way you could say this doesn't even matter, but if there's anything that matters, if there were something that matters, I think this would be it, that you're paying attention.
Yeah.
Because that's where the joy
yeah.
is. But going back to the first conversation we had, that's also where, like, the love is. And the connection and all the things
right.
that we really want. You know, just paying attention to this being, keeping the attention here on this person as he or she goes through life, that's a really loving thing to do. The stories
mm-hmm.
all take us away from here into some kind of place that's really unhappy and separate and deprived and all that kind of stuff. But to stay here,
mm-hmm.
to let go of the stories, to not go there, to stay here instead, in this really amazing way, we truly receive everything that we're looking for. And then we can interact with the world however it seems best. You know, from that place, we'll know what's next, the next step to take. You know, we might enjoy all kinds of things. We might participate in all sorts of stuff. We might avoid participating in all sorts of stuff. Who knows? But starting from that place where, you know, the commitment is, I want to be here with me because
mm-hmm.
I know that's where what I'm looking for in my life is. Then
mm-hmm.
it like you say, it's really liberating from all the stuff that conditioning does to us.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, I've heard Sherry talking about, you know, kind of describing a process where it just occurs, you know, something occurs to you to do and you don't have a conversation about it.
Yep.
You know, you just kind of do it and then you do the next thing and you do the next thing and there's never a conversation. And, you know, when I hear that description of life, I just, I mean, it's like, wow, that's what I want.
Absolutely.
You know, that just sounds so good.
Yeah. In a funny way, it's funny, isn't it, that it comes down to that? But that's a life well lived.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't matter what you do. That's a life well lived.
Mm-hmm.
You can even do fun
it's
stuff
so
like
that.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that it's just so counter to what we've been taught.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we've been taught to live in a conditioned reality.
Yeah.
That's why this stuff, these habits are so hard to break. You know, like that should thing. You know, everybody believes in should. You know, everybody thinks that should is the most important thing in the world. If you should do that, you got to do it. And it takes a lot of awareness and, on top of that, a lot of determination and courage to be willing to let go of should in order to make a free choice. And luckily, we can be kind of called into that possibility by the experience we have when we do that, which is joyful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's wonderful
right.
to be free of all of that conditioned world. It feels great, and we know when we're there. It's like, this is it. This is what
mm-hmm.
I want in my life. And so the more and more we have
yeah.
those kinds of experiences, the more we want them. And like you were saying earlier, the more we realize, I don't want the other. I'm not willing to waste my life on a gigantic to-do list that I ultimately will fail to complete.
Right. Yeah, it's very easy to forget that. But thank you for the reminder. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Yeah, it's the hardest thing. You'll probably just slide, you know, pretty quickly right back into, you know, the old point of view, and then you'll remember and go back and forth because it really is the hardest thing in the world to remember. You know, there's one little thing that we have here that's a big part of our practice here at the monastery, which we call the one rule. And the one rule is we will use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and end suffering. And that's really what you and I are talking about right now. You know, to keep the one rule in front of our awareness so we're always looking to see how we cause ourselves to suffer and how we cannot suffer, that's the key. That's the key to a life that we want to live. It's just the most challenging thing in the world to remember.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Dave.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. That was fun.
All right, good talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air. Dave, that was a very fun conversation.
That was fun, wasn't it?
It was great. Yes.
Go ahead.
I was going to say exploring lots of different angles of practice from the should to the one rule and a lot of different areas in between there.
Yeah, and it's just so, I mean, I really got that for myself again in the conversation that really is what life is all about. You know, it's not about all that stuff. You know, it's not about everything that we all worry about all the time and stress about and try to make happen and everything. It really is just about just being here and paying attention.
Yes, it really simplifies everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
Yeah.
And I'm glad for that. I don't know, I imagine you probably are too, but it would be a very different thing if this practice was something we really had to strive to understand or to achieve or any of that, or, you know, if it was really complicated in that way.
Yes.
But, you know, it's just so simple. It just comes back to be here, you know,
yes.
Bring your attention back here, and everything will be revealed, you know, that we want to see, and we'll receive everything that we're looking for.
It's a miracle. Yet again, at the end of every show we get to, it's a miracle. Dave, I have to say, I feel like I've misled a couple of our callers here.
Uh-oh.
I invited everybody to call, and they did.
Oh.
It's now 6 o'clock.
Oh, shoot.
So we got two people on hold here, and I'm going to strongly encourage them and invite them to call us back early next week.
Okay, good. Great. Well, I'm sure we'll hear from them later on.
Yes. Thank you so much, Dave.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
Okay, good
Take
night.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.